Welcome to the Red Zone.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It is 6:01, Friday, July the 13th. Friday the 13th. You superstitious man, Josh?
I am not.
Me neither, so it doesn't matter. Who cares?
I didn't even realize it was Friday.
I didn't either until I was reading the date right now. And that's all people know. That's all people need to know. If you are suspicious, then hopefully you don't cross a black cat today, or one doesn't cross you.
Well, the
like that.
Chicago Cubs did back in 69, and they still haven't lived it down. But
welcome to the show. Alex Leopold, Josh Miller inside our CKCU studios. We're going to have a little bit of fun today, everyone. By the way, it's very, very air-conditioned
here. Yes, nice.
And from what I hear, actually, well, here's your weekly CKCU weather update as you're waking up. I feel like we should have, like, one of those weather, those newscast weather
alerts.
Yeah, the sound effects and whatnot. But it is 17 degrees outside this morning. It's very, very nice out, which is a nice change because apparently it is supposed to be 34 degrees later today.
Yeah.
But right now, it does not feel like that at all. It feels very nice. Kind of like this studio.
Yes, very nice.
So what we're going to do on this morning show, Josh, you look like you were going to interrupt and say something.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I just want to say it's nice that I'm still alive, by the way, after this week, but go ahead.
After your 3-day vacation?
Yeah.
That's right. For loyal listeners of the show, Josh tends to take exactly 3 days off from sports a year, and that's not necessarily voluntary because he doesn't tend to watch the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, so that gives him 3 days to do whatever he wants to do. So, Josh, you want to inform the people what you did? The rowdy things you got up to painting the Boondocks red?
Oh, just visited some friends. I was in Elmer Tuesday night. By the way, that's a very nice town, by the way. Lots of nice pubs and establishments if you're looking for places to go. And Wednesday night I was out at Boston Pizza.
A favorite of yours? Did they recognize you?
They did not. I'm not there often enough to be on the regular.
We're not quite that level. We're D-class celebrities.
We're working our way up.
We're moving on up, and this show today is going to really cement us as,
I think it's going to be a good
at
show.
Least C-listers.
Yeah.
So what we have for everybody
well,
this morning?
Well, at least we're better off than Kathy Griffin, right? Because she's still on the D-list.
Yeah. Well, anybody's better off than her. We're all bigger celebrities than her.
Okay.
Normally, if it comes to a point every summer where the sports landscape really slows down.
This is the time of year where things start to go slowly.
And what Josh and I have done, this is our third summer of doing it, is we have what's called our summer series. And what we like to do is we like to pose a question to the audience. We like to pose a question or make lists or compile statistics and basically make it a fun debate. And the first one that Josh and I have come up with this year is what is the best, because it is never, ever, there's an off season of hockey, Josh, but it's never too early or too late to talk hockey.
Not here. Not in this country.
So our question that we posed to each other last week was, what is the best NHL draft class of all time?
So we said, let's find out.
Louis said, let's go ahead and let's compile a crap load of research and see what we come up with. So what the parameters that we set out for ourselves with, and anybody at any point can join in the conversation.
Facebook, Twitter.
Via the Facebook page, if you're up this early, if you're on Facebook, CKCU's The Red Zone, like the fan page, let us know. If you want to take a guess at who's going
to
win.
If you're listening to the podcast, do it anyway.
That's right.
Tell us what
Twitter, CKCU _ The Red Zone, and hey, if you're listening to it via podcast, tell us whether or not you agree with the choices.
We want to know what people think.
Or if they want to share their opinions via telephone, like some people still prefer to do, 613-520-2528. Let us know during the commercial breaks what you think of the draft classes that we have chosen so far. But the parameters that we chose, and we're going to let Josh explain pre-1967 in a sec, but as of the modern draft era, we started in 1967. and we went to 2003. And we stopped at 2003 because, really, it's not fair to go beyond that. At the 8-year part, while you take out a year because of the lockout, you really don't know what a guy is going to be yet, necessarily. But we stopped at 2003 because this will be their decade in the league.
Right away, there'll be those that would make an argument for the 2005 class.
And maybe they will.
And maybe we'll touch on that later.
And who's to say? They might not be the best draft class of all time, but if you are... You still don't know what those kids are going to be yet.
Absolutely. But I can say right away that that's going to be the one crawl in some people's...
We are more than okay with letting that happen. Yeah, so we compiled 1967 to 2003, so we got ourselves 36 drafts to choose from. And the reason why we started at 1967 is because things were done a little bit differently before then. And before we get to the list, we're going to let Josh tell everybody how it was done.
Well, just very quickly, you talk about 1963. For the first 5 years of the draft, it was a little different. But even before then, first of all, it was called the amateur draft. But prior to the draft era, NHL teams sponsored junior teams. And you could sign one of three ways. And I'm not going to go through the whole machination of everything, but there were three categories you could sign, A, B, or C. And you could sign at the age of 18. And basically, in most of these categories, your parents signed for you. So you were spoken for even before you were done junior. So... If an NHL team had an affiliation with a certain club, you knew where you were going, and you knew very early on. So it was different in those days, and it was much easier to assemble a stranglehold on the talent pool because not everybody had the same structure that everybody else did.
As of 1967, that's when it started to change over into what we know today as the draft.
As the modern draft, right.
There would be position standings in 1967. That was the expansion draft also.
Interestingly to note, the draft in 68 was considered so weak that the Toronto Maple Leafs declined participation. Would you hear of that today? Of course not.
Some cool little tidbits, because 1967 was the first... of the expansion drafts. All the new teams got to pick first, but of the 18 players selected, Josh, 17 of them were Canadian, and one, Gary Wood, drafted by the California Golden Seals, was taken at 12th.
Ah, so knock on wood in that case.
So we're going to get to it.
But
we have compiled five.
I was going to say...
We're going to count them down.
I was going to say one more little tidbit.
Go ahead.
We often know the draft as being a big thing being held in arenas. In the early days...
It used to be held in hotels.
It used to be held in hotels or in league offices. And the first draft was held in the Montreal Forum in 1970.
Not that we are going to throw a bunch of numbers at people this early in the morning, because we know that nobody... wants to hear it, but the way we compiled these best draft classes, so people know that we're not picking these arbitrarily at random, what we did was we looked at the amount of games, the amount of All-Stars, the amount of Hall of Famers or Stanley Cups that are won within a draft class. So there are numbers to back these up. We will tell people the numbers that they need to know without having their head swimming in their morning coffee. So we're going to talk about number five before we get to our first commercial break. And number five on the list of best drafts of all time is the 2003 NHL draft, the year that we had the cutoff date at. And to me, Josh, what was so surprising about this draft class in general is, despite the fact that these kids have played a maximum of 642 games, that's the most anybody has played so far in that draft, and that's Eric Staal. They have done some outstanding work for 8 and 9 year careers. 22 All-Stars, 9 Stanley Cups, over 900 playoff games played between these kids.
in the first 15 picks, or prior to the first 15 picks, Ryan Suter, Braden Coburn, Dustin Brown, Jeff Carter, and Brent Seabrook, all gone by the 15th pick.
And listen,
that's not even the cream of the crop.
And this is a draft class that, whether or not you know by the year, these are people that everybody knows.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Eric Staal.
Brent Burns.
Thomas Vanek.
Ryan Getzlaf.
Zach Parise.
Ryan Kesler.
Corey Perry.
Mike Richards.
Louis Erickson.
I'll throw in Eric Fair.
Patrice Bergeron. Jimmy Howard. David Backes. Shea Weber. Etc., etc. You look at this draft, and it really is a standout draft, Josh. You look at it, and it's just immediately different once you're scrolling through the rounds.
Absolutely.
I mean, you look at these guys, and everybody, what amazes me about this draft class more than anybody else is none of them have blown you away in terms of points per game or anything like that.
But they're all serviceable.
They're all extremely consistent. Everybody has played between 480 and 600 games. No. Everybody that we just mentioned.
And you alluded to it in that last day. Nobody in that class that we mentioned has been really injury prone.
Everybody has put up a serviceable amount of points. There are a lot of all-stars, a lot of awards won.
And we talked about it before coming on the air. One of the things that the teams define success by in a draft is if you can find a couple guys, regardless of numbers, if they have 10-year careers plus in the league, you've done well.
And these guys...
Because you've found yourself a roster player.
All the ones that we've just named by this year will be in their 10th year in the league.
And they're all stars. They're different levels of stars, but they're all stars.
Stanley Cup winners throughout this group. Marc-Andre Fleury with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Eric Staal with Carolina. Jeff Carter, Dustin Brown, and Mike Richards all this year with the LA Kings. Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry with the Anaheim Ducks of 2007. Patrice Bergeron with the Bruins last year. Dustin Byfuglien won a Stanley Cup 2 years ago in Chicago. If you look at these kids, Josh, and you are to extrapolate, some of them are only going to play another maybe 3-4 years. Some of them are going to play another 10 to 12. But if you look at 9 Stanley Cups, 22 All-Star games, over 900 playoff games, this could be, when all is said and done, 20 years from now, when some of these guys are going to be Hall of Fame ballot inductees.
Well, that's the most impressive part of all this, is they're not done.
And that's what I was going to ask. Could you see this someday? Because other people on this list are going to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
People might win their second, or they might win their first. Some notables on here that don't have a Stanley Cup: Shea Weber, Ryan Kesler, Brent Burns, Zach Parise. These guys, Ryan Suter, these guys can still win Stanley Cups. And it's safe to say that a lot of them will. Are they going to touch the number one draft class of all time? Which we won't. That's just our teaser at it. Can they reach those numbers? They could certainly be on their way to.
They have time. Time is on their side.
So what do you think?
Well, I think it goes to show you, if this is number five... It's a pretty damn good class. I think it goes to show you just how important the art of drafting is and just how good and great the other classes that we've picked out are.
I think 2003 was a renaissance of sorts. Because something we're going to get to in a little more in depth as the show goes along is there was a significant drop-off for about 12 to 13 years.
And I have an interesting theory on what brought that renaissance back, and we'll touch on that later in the program.
But you look at all these guys as part of this renaissance, Josh, and they all play the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You look at guys like Getzlaf and Brown and Carter and Staal, they all play the game the same way.
I hate to look at things this way, but... You know, I'm thinking of a guy like Grapes right now. What do all these guys have in common that we mentioned on this list?
They're all North American.
Bingo.
aside from Louis Erickson.
I'm just...
All of them.
I'm just throwing that out there. Not saying that it has anything to do with anything, but they all are North American born players.
But he's letting it be known to the public that that is what he's getting at, without saying it. He sewered me into answering for him. But this draft class is well on their way, Josh. You give them another 5 to 7 years of seasoning, and guys like Eric Staal, now that his brother's in Carolina, could have his name on the Stanley Cup again. Getzlaff and Perry. Richards and Carter. These guys are amongst, and they all have what's crazy to me is they have all played a ridiculous amount of playoff games so far for being all under 30. 62, 67, 83.
Well, that's the other difference too nowadays. We're seeing a lot of young players succeed earlier.
And a parameter that Josh and I talked about, people are going to say to us, well, Alex and Josh, things might be inflated a bit in terms of playoff games played, because you could make it to the third round in the NHL these days and play more games than people had to win the Stanley Cup. So that's going to inflate your number. But still, it's all relevant. These kids having a sheer...
It's not their fault. They're just playing in the era they're given.
And more than anything, what it establishes is that these guys have made the playoffs on a consistent basis. That's part of being a great player. Those guys are the reason why a lot of their teams made it to the playoffs, made it far into the playoffs. So at number 5, we have the 2003 NHL draft. We have got 4 more to go through. If you want to join in the conversation and let us know which ones you think should be on the list or are going to be on the list, Twitter @CKCU_TheRedZone. Facebook, CKCU is the Red Zone. Call us at 613-520-2528. We are going to go to our first commercial break. When we come down, when we come back, we'll come back with number 4 and 3 on our NHL best draft classes of all time here on the Red Zone. Stay tuned.
My God,
you won't believe this.
Something is different.
Good or bad?
Anything different is good.
CKCU programming is now available on demand.
What's going to happen?
Something wonderful.
You can now revisit a previously aired program through the website.
Upload everything. I want to get it all on the internet tonight.
If you missed your favorite program...
What did I do last night?
Or you'd just like to hear it again...
Rock and roll!
Rock and roll!
You can link to the audio through the program's playlist at ckcufm.com.
It says 100% guaranteed.
Each show will be available on demand for 30 days after it originally aired.
Soak it up. It's your last chance.
CKCU, proud to serve you, the listener. Now available on demand.
That's all I have to say about that.
Stay tuned, Boppers. Stay tuned.
CKCU is doing more than keep up with the times.
We're not called the Mighty 93 for nothing.
The face of our community is changing. So is the face of radio. You used to be the listener, a set of ears we really didn't know.
Now you can be more. We've taken CKCUFM.com to a new level. Connect with more than 110 different shows through interactive playlists. It's the latest way to get your message to on-air hosts in real time.
When your favorite show is on, click on the current playlist and share with the host. If your host opens their playlist, it will show in the on-air box.
It's more than shout-outs. It's your opportunity to be co-host. You can also leave your comments after a show, and it's better than a phone call.
It's faster than Twitter, but we like that too. No matter what genre your favorite show is, we're all one radio family.
And you're a part of it. Interactive playlists remain active for a week before the comments close.
Interactive CKCU. One more way to connect with your community station. CKCU 93.1 FM. Online at ckcufm.com.
Welcome to the Red Zone.
Back here on the Red Zone with this super summer edition of our best NHL draft classes of all time.
If you're just joining us, we are asking the question, which is the best? if you missed the first 20 minutes of the show, we only counted down number 5. We were explaining the parameters of the show and how we're going about this. If you want to know now, got to listen to the whole thing via podcast. But we counted down with number 5. That was the 2003 NHL Draft. Next up on the list, we have the 1971 Draft, which is some quick things to throw at people. 3 Hockey Hall of Famers came out of this draft. 12 Stanley Cups won. 9,500 points. 1,500 playoff games. And some of the most notable names that nobody needs an introduction to.
And the first ever class to have Hall of Famers drafted number 1 and number 2.
Number 1 that year was
Guy Lafleur.
Number 2, Marcel Dion.
And if I can just give a little precursor information as to how that draft went down, because I want to give a nod to the shrewdest man in hockey at that time, Sam Pollock, who was one of the most brilliant minds in the history of the game. 1970, gets the first pick from California Golden Seals. So he saw that coming, and he would have gotten the first pick had the Seals finished last, but the problem was L.A. was playing worse than California was, the Golden Seals. So what does he do? He trades Ernie Lacombe to L.A., gets their pick, lifts them out of the cellar. So he's got the first 2 overall picks in the same draft, and he gets both guys. Sam Pollock later said that Lacombe wanted out to go to a West Coast team. Shrewd guy, that guy. I don't see anybody else today that could pull off a deal like that.
Is that your precursor? You're done?
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
Why, would you want more?
No. Some other names that people perhaps grew up with. Rick Martin, who died last year. Part of the French Connection line.
Carved out quite a career in Buffalo for himself.
Terry O'Reilly, the big mean Bruin, who won 1 Stanley Cup. Larry Robinson, who was just named an associate coach in San Jose, won 6 Stanley Cups with the Montreal Canadiens. Rick Kehoe, compiling between, and there are other guys that go along with that, depending on your hockey knowledge and the depth of it. You've got guys, notables that people have heard of now, guys like Craig Ramsey, former NHL coach, not a very good one. John Garrett, former goaltender, also not a very good one, but now a broadcaster. Steve Vickers. Guys that had serviceable careers. And that's the ultimate question, Josh, is what is the most important thing in terms of judging a draft class? Do you look at consistency in terms of games played? Because we all know, what's the average NHL career? 4 years, maybe?
I think from a team perspective, I think you have to look at how many guys did we draft that made our roster and contributed in whatever way they could. Did you have a guy that grinded? Did you have a guy that scored goals? Did you have a guy who was a good defensive player? And if you can get enough of those picks, you'll have a good team.
We had a guy on here in Marcel Dion who scored some of the most points in NHL history with 1,771. But he didn't win diddly squat. He didn't win anything with the Kings or with the Red Wings. And I believe he played for the Rangers somewhere in between.
Yep.
Either way, he won nothing. And yet he is considered one of the greatest players of all time, is a Hockey Hall of Famer, and is part of this specific draft class, which we have deemed the 4th best of all time. Why is that?
Well, Dion had the numbers, and I think what was impressive is he put those numbers up on a bad team. On a lot of bad teams, because the Kings were an expansion team at the time.
And he stuck it out. He was originally drafted by Detroit, but Detroit stunk at that time. They stunk for a long time. And then he played 11 seasons in Los Angeles. And aside from that, was it 1982, The Miracle in Manchester?
Yep.
Where they upset the Oilers. They didn't do anything. That was the apex. That was the climax. That's as high... That's the top of the mountain.
They never built off of that and toiled in obscurity until the great one got there.
Not even a Stanley Cup final
no.
for Dion. But he is considered one of the greatest of all time because in an era where...
Well, that's... what. Something I always talk about with you is the eye test. And if you watched him play, you'd know why he's there. And if the people that saw him play, they know why he's a Hall of Famer.
Not only that, but you look at some of the eye-popping numbers that weren't commonplace at the time. He put up 121 points with the Red Wings in 1974-1975. Some of his yearly totals, 122, 130, 137, 135, 117, 107, 126. The guy was consistent. He put up gigantic numbers, especially for the times.
100-point seasons are the benchmark, and this guy was doing it consistently.
Eight of them. Which is why no cups... But over 1,770 NHL points, you're bound to make any list of greatest players of all time. Larry Robinson goes without saying. Certain people might only know him as a coach and as an assistant coach.
And a damn good one.
But before that, he was a damn good Hall of Fame defenseman for the Canadiens.
You know, playing for Montreal is almost a curse because you can get swept under because they had so many great players. So if you manage to stand out from that crap the way Robinson...
Almost 1,000 points in 227 playoff games.
For a defenseman, too. So.
Big Bird knew how to play the position.
I never liked that nickname for him. I can't picture a guy with yellow feathers when I think about Larry Robinson. Anyway.
He's a big boy. He's 6'8".
He is. He is, but I just don't get the nickname Big Bird. Anyway.
What you start to see as we learned, you go through these numbers and you see longevity. Again, the same way as the playoff games. It might not necessarily mean as much because there weren't as many games in the schedule mm-hmm. once upon a time. But you look at 8,900 career games between all of these All-Stars... That's almost 2,000 behind the 2003 draft class. But just because guys didn't play as long. But guess what? Any draft class that wins 12 Stanley Cups...
Well, the one caveat I'll say about guys not playing as long is that the guys today are in so much better physical condition that they're able to play at a high level into their late 30s. That didn't happen back then because we didn't have the fitness programs. We talked about Guy Lafleur being in this class. Guy Lafleur
was an enormous smoker.
He used to smoke between periods, for God's sake. I mean, that goes to show you the difference in time that we live in now.
Number 3. Best draft of all time. The 1974.
We should have had, like, little, little... things that come, you know, to shout out the numbers. We could have really jazzed up this production.
It's true. We could have had some audiovisual aids to go with it, which we actually do have. Just not yet.
Yeah.
But the 1974 NHL draft. Some numbers that people will undoubtedly want to know. 19 All-Stars in this draft, Josh. 3 Hall of Famers. Over 14,000 games played. 12 Stanley Cups won. Over 1,500 playoff games. You want some names? People want some names. Clark Gillies, Pierre LaRoche, Brian Trotche, Mark Howe, Tiger Williams, Charlie Simmer, Mike Rogers, Robert Murray. You have a lot. And this is a more well-spread draft than some of the other ones. The guys won't necessarily, aside from... guys like Brian Trotche and Mark Howe, they might not necessarily blow you away in terms of star power.
But Mark Howell is a Hall of Famer.
So is Clark Gillies.
Yeah.
So is Brian Trotche. Brian Trotche was a second-round draft pick that year. 22nd overall. The number one pick that year was a man by the name of Greg Jolly. He did not have an outstanding career by any stretch of the imagination.
In his case, did not have a jolly good time.
You've got guys on here that have won ridiculous amounts of Stanley Cups. You got Brian Trotche, who won 4 with the Islanders and 2 with the Penguins. You got Pierre LaRoche, who won 2 with the Canadiens. Clark Gillies won 4 with the Islanders. Dynasties. What you come across to learn in this, Josh, as well, is that dynasties obviously happened, but they were, teams were kept together longer.
Well,
they were given a chance to win together for a long time.
I don't know if you want me to go into this now, but I was talking before the show about how free agency impacts things. It really puts more emphasis on the draft. Because, especially now, when you have free agency after 7 accrued seasons, you need to draft solid players to get 7 good years out of them before you possibly lose them. So it increases. There's a lot more scouting that goes into these things, and it increases the importance of all this.
People are going to say to us, this is unfair. You guys are judging an entire draft class based on a handful of players.
Well, that's not exactly what we're doing.
On a select 15 to 20 guys out of the however many, potentially 100.
Hey, there's a lot more guys that went on to have careers in this league. We just can't mention everybody.
No, but what I want to say to people is this. Every draft class, from here to eternity, for as long as there are drafts, for as long as there are professional sports, the draft classes are going to be judged based on a select 15 to 20 guys, if you're lucky, because you see how few people actually make it to the big leagues. It is not a given that because you are a first overall draft pick, in the case of Greg Jolly, he played 320 NHL games. You look at any of those guys from the 2003 draft, and they've all played more than him, everybody that we mentioned. Even the goalies.
There's no guarantee that...
There is no guarantee, but you are judged, your draft class, and certain generations are carried on the backs of 15 to 20 players if you're lucky. And you are judged as a draft class by those 15 to 20 guys that succeed.
And sometimes the spot at which you're drafted can be a little bit of a curse. Because if you're number one and you go on to a serviceable NHL career, that's not good enough at number one. But if you're down the line, second, third round, you have a serviceable career, okay. So sometimes it's just some guys can't handle the pressure of having the mantle placed upon them. The example I always come back with was Alexandre Daigle.
Who people will know here in the city, obviously.
I mean, ouch, you know. First overall, kid just never... Later admitted that he didn't have the passion for the game, which you need, but... If that kid hadn't been drafted first overall, I would probably think he'd had a better career. Because remember, he played his best hockey when he made his comeback in Minnesota, sort of toiling in a...
After his acting career failed.
But there was no pressure on him in Minnesota, and he played pretty well.
At that point, he was for a paycheck, and that's why nobody ever respected the guy. But you look at any draft in any sport, Josh. Especially, even if you're looking at something like the Major League Baseball draft, there are 98,000 rounds and 6,000 players selected, 60,000 players selected, and how many of them actually make it to the big leagues? So few.
And baseball is the best example of that because the process of getting to the big leagues is the slowest of all the sports.
So any draft class, whether it's hockey or basketball or baseball or football.
Well, I think the best example in all sports that proves how hard drafting is, does anybody remember the Ryan Leaf-Peyton Manning debate?
Yeah.
One guy's going to the Hall of Fame, one guy's going somewhere else. That's that's the dichotomy of drafting.
It's never a given, and that's why we didn't put in anybody from 2004 onwards, because you don't know what the kids are going to be yet in the 2009 NHL draft. Or 2008 NHL draft. No. You already might know that...
Takes time.
Some of the kids are all-stars or superstars. But guys like Steven Stamkos, while they've run one, while he's won Rocket Richard trophies, he hasn't won anything, any significant hardware yet.
He's had four good seasons.
We are not undoing or bashing any of the accomplishment that guys like Stamkos have made.
But let's see what else you can do.
But let's see what you can do over another 6 to 7 year span so you catch up to these guys.
Be fun to
but
watch.
But every
I'll
draft
tell you.
Class yep. is judged based on a select 15 to 20 players. That's the bottom line. People can agree with it. They
and
cannot agree with it.
And that's classified as a good class, too. 15 to 20 guys. Some drafts, as we saw, particularly in those early drafts, as I said, you know, 1 year Toronto declined to participate because the class was so bad. The drafts are deeper now. So important to draft well. Look at all the cup champions that draft well.
Before we get... Well, we'll do our number two on the list. We'll take another break. We'll come back with some other interesting tidbits. But at number two on the Red Zone's list of greatest draft classes of all time, we have the 1984 NHL draft, which I believe this is the one that you said that you had a tidbit of information that you wanted to share with people.
Well, we talked about, we were saying earlier on before we came on, four hockey Hall of Famers in that draft. Let me read off some of the names that went in that draft. You had Lemieux and Muller go number one and number two. Other names that went early in the draft, Eddie Olczyk, who had a serviceable career. Ally Afraidy, who was a very serviceable defenseman. Number 12 was Gary Roberts, who had a wonderful career, was a great player and a great leader, wonderful intangibles.
And did win a Stanley Cup in Calgary.
In that draft. Patrick Waugh,
who was taken way, way down at number 51.
51. Stéphane Richer in that draft. Great skater, wonderful speed.
And that's an interesting tidbit for people, Josh. Stéphane Richer, Scott Mellenby, Craig Billington, all taken before Patrick Waugh.
Luc Robitaille.
All the way down after Patrick Waugh. Brett Hull.
Gary Suter.
There are a lot of Hall of Famers. Some numbers to throw at people. 14 Stanley Cups won. 4 Hockey Hall of Famers.
And here's the interesting tidbit, though. There are actually 5 Hall of Famers in that class.
Just 4 in the sport of
hockey. Well, I should say one of them is going to be a Hall of Famer in his sport, and that is Tom Glavine.
Who that year was also drafted by Los Angeles.
Drafted by Los Angeles. I think Tom made the right choice, don't you?
It would have been interesting to see how he did, though,
yeah,
had he chosen a career in hockey. But over 17,000 games played, Josh, for this draft class. Over 2,000 playoff games. 14 Stanley Cups won, as mentioned. This
one,
draft class...
One franchise saved.
In Mario Lemieux. These guys were winners. I mean, looking at some of them as some of the other names that we didn't necessarily mention. Guys like Kevin Hatcher, Kirk McLean.
Serviceable.
And guys that people still know today.
Kirk McLean made the best stack pad save I ever saw in the playoffs against Calgary in 94. He might have been the best pad stacking goalie that I saw growing up as a kid.
I think what was the most impressive about this draft class, Josh, is that these were the ones where you started to see some scoops in the later rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Patrick Waugh, Brett Hull, and Luc Robitaille all drafted after the first round, and those are 3 Hockey Hall of Famers. Brett Hull won two Stanley Cups, one in Calgary, one in Dallas. Luc Robitaille won one in Detroit. Patrick Waugh won 4, 2 with Montreal, 2 with Colorado. For Brett Hull and Luc Robitaille, 1,391 points, 1,394 points. 202 playoff games, 159 playoff games. These guys, They need no introduction. They're timeless. People already know who these guys are. We're just giving you more information to go with. And I know that people are going to say, hey, that's pretty damn impressive. Who do you possibly have that can beat them?
Well, we do.
And that's really a testament to how deep this next draft is. We're not going to get to it just yet. But could you make an argument, if you wanted to, could you make an argument that this is the best draft class of all time?
You look at the guys that were picked in the later rounds. You look at the impact that a guy like Mario Lemieux had on the sport.
What Luc Robitaille did for hockey in L.A.
Yep.
What Brett Hull did for hockey in Dallas. What Patrick Waugh did for hockey in Colorado. You argue that...
What Gary Roberts has done for the fitness level in this sport.
You look at a guy like Patrick Waugh, and obviously he's not the only one that had a hand in this. When you inherit a team with Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg and Patrick Waugh, you're probably bound to win some Stanley Cups. But you can make an argument, Josh, that had that team not come along and won a Stanley Cup in their first year in Colorado and created that culture of winning...
Well, that culture started with another draft, as far as I'm concerned.
No doubt, but regardless, what we're talking about here, Patrick Waugh had a hand in a team like Colorado. You talk about Mario Lemieux saving the Pittsburgh Penguins. Say that Colorado had toiled in mediocrity for their entire existence.
The stupidity of Mario Tremblay was Colorado's game. Because if Patrick never gets hung out to dry on a Saturday night in Montreal against Detroit,
Colorado might not be celebrating a Stanley Cup the next season.
Certainly not the next season, and maybe not
at all
in their history.
So I think that people forget that. That's also what Josh and I try to take into the equation, is that these guys and their influence, not only in terms of numbers or Stanley Cups won, but in terms of what they meant to the sport and what they did for a city or for a franchise. You look at guys like Luc Robitaille, Brett Hull, Patrick Waugh, and Mario Lemieux. They did a lot for the sport aside from put up numbers and win Stanley Cups.
Numbers are not everything, as I always say.
These guys are the reason why there are viable franchises in certain cities. I mean, when Brett Hull scored that Stanley Cup winning goal in 1999, he was part of those great Dallas teams at the end of the 90s and early 2000s.
Well, the Stars, as we know, may be struggling for attendance in Dallas, but if you look at the growth of minor hockey around Texas, you can point to that moment.
You can trace it back to that time.
And I could hear the fans in Buffalo screaming, he had his foot in the crease, he had his foot in the crease.
Which was a stupid rule to begin with. That's why it only lasted
one season. No question it was a stupid rule, but...
But you could make the argument before we go to break here. You would agree. You can make the argument that people could say this is the best draft class of all time.
But not in our minds.
But not in our minds.
And you'll find out why when we return from this commercial break on the Red Zone. Stay tuned.
Did you know that CKCU FM 93.1 is live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Or that CKCU is the largest listener-supported radio station in Ottawa-Carleton? You did? Well, did you know that CKCU has a Facebook page? Visit www.facebook.com/CKCUFM to see the latest photos and also see the status updates. Also, like us on Facebook. That's www.facebook.com/CKCUFM.
Hello? Yeah, I'm talking to you. No, no, not you. You, the business owner who listens to the station. Not all the rest of you who listen to CKCU. You can talk amongst yourselves right now. Okay, as a business owner, have you ever considered advertising on CKCU? You listen to the station along with thousands of others, right? You know we have varied and dedicated listeners. You're one of them, right? So you know how amazing our programming is and how dynamic our ads are. But you probably don't know how inexpensive it is to get your message on air at CKCU. All you have to do is contact Ron Steves the CKCU Sponsorship Coordinator, by email at sponsors@ckcufm.com or by phone at 613-520-2600, extension 1622, to find out more. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to the Red Zone.
Something before the game about him being genetically perfect for this kind of situation. Somehow, Mark Messier becomes a larger-than-life person when the situation calls for and warrants it.
We are back here on the Red Zone. It is 6:47 in the morning. Alex Leopold alongside Josh Miller. That was a little bit of a tidbit. That's a teaser, everyone. That lets you know who is, what year. If you know the year that Mark Messier was drafted, you know which is going to be named the best draft class of all time. But and before we get to that...
And if you know it, tweet us right now.
CKCU underscore the Red Zone. Or Facebook us, CKCU's the Red Zone.
Because we are going to torture you and make you wait a few minutes.
That's right. But you can agree or disagree with the draft classes so far. But if you're just tuning in, this is the first episode of our summer series. Our super summer series, as Josh likes to call it for alliteration purposes. And that's where we take where we pose a question to the audience. It's never too early or too late to start talking hockey in this country. So we pose the question today of what is the best NHL draft class of all time? A quick rundown of numbers 5-4-3-2 up until this point. The 2003 NHL draft came in at number 5. 1971 draft at number 4. 1974 at number 3. And 1984 at number 2. Some notable mentions, some honorable mentions, the 1980 and the 1981 draft. In the 1980 draft, as Josh said before we got on air, it's a top-heavy draft. You had Denny Savard, Larry Murphy, Paul Coffey, Yari Curry. But after that, it takes a little bit of a nosedive. We're not saying that the other people on there weren't serviceable guys, but there are names like Barry Peterson, Don Perupi, Bernie Nichols, Walt Puttenby, Mike McPhee, Brian Mullen, Andy Moog. There are guys that are absolutely serviceable in that draft, Josh, but not the four guys cannot carry that entire draft class. Along with another which was really, really, really close on making our list was the 1981 draft, which had four Hall of Famers as well. Al MacInnis, Grant Fuhr, Ron Francis, Dale Hawerchuk, John Van Beesbrook, Mike Vernon.
I'll go 10 years later, go to 1991, just based on the whole machination that surrounded that thing, because that was the whole Lindros, I won't go to Quebec. And I won't start on the whole, but I don't understand how it's not an honor just to get drafted into that league and you want to hold somebody hostage the way he did. And Quebec, or Philly, basically gave up half of their team to get that guy, and I think it really cost them. They ended up losing a pick that ended up being Peter Forsberg, who I alluded to earlier when I said that... You were talking about Patrick, because had they not gotten Forsberg in 91, that's another reason. Maybe they don't win that Stanley Cup in 96. You go on down the line, Scott Niedermeyer.
Which is a kick to the groin, if there are any Toronto Maple Leafs fans, because that pick was acquired from Toronto. Scott Niedermeyer.
Well, I guess rightfully in one point, Lindros ended up playing there later on in his career, but anyway.
No, but I'm talking about Niedermeyer.
Okay, yeah.
But he could have been a guy who's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
He could have been a Toronto Maple Leaf, so that's a kick in the pants for some. As Josh mentioned, some other notable names.
Well, I was going to say Pat Falloon, who had a serviceable career. Martin Lapointe, who was another good grinder that people liked. Brian Ralston.
The Wizard, Ray Whitney, who just signed a 2-year deal with Dallas. Was he taken at 23rd overall that year.
He was on that list.
Marcus Naslin.
Alexei Kovalev.
Chris Osgood.
Dean McCammon. Martin Rutinski. And did you say Osgood already?
Yes.
Because he won 3 championships and nobody gives him any respect. He must feel like Aretha.
So serviceable names, in terms of relative Hall of Famers, I think that you can pretty much argue, out of any of those guys, Forsberg would have gotten into the Hall of Fame had he played longer. Naslin,
he may still.
He may still. It'd have to be a weak draft year. Marcus Naslin could have made it in had he won anything. But I think that we can agree for the most part that there's probably only going to be one Hall of Famer in this draft, and that is Scott Niedermayer.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the guys, while serviceable, wouldn't make it in. And that's why, while very noteworthy of a draft, they did not make the list. Also, before we get to number one, Josh and I would like to talk about, in doing this research, you come across a lot of Hall of Famers, obviously. You come across some great years in drafting. But there was a severe drop-off. And this isn't saying that there weren't talented players drafted in this time. It just means that there was a severe drop-off in talent and guys that became notable or serviceable NHL players. And that was at the end of the 80s, pretty much all the way until the 2003 NHL draft. Which lends itself to the argument, I know that Josh is about to start up on, but it lends itself to the argument that there are too many players, too many rounds, too many teams.
Well, that's one thing. But if you go back on that time frame, Hockey Canada was down. They struggled a little bit in the mid-90s, and the program wasn't as high. And that's where most of your players, even today, still come from. So when the top supplier has a bit of a drought, that's going to...
When their product is weak.
Yeah. The other thing, too, I think you mentioned it and sort of alluded to it, I don't know if this is where you were going. I don't think it is. But the Europeans started to come in. And I think what teams noticed was, you know what? Just because they had success in Europe doesn't mean it's going to translate to success here. Because there were a lot of guys that came over and couldn't handle the rigors of an NHL schedule, the media, the culture shock. And I think that hurt a lot of teams for the longest time. They became more judicious in their drafting of foreign-born players. I think that's another factor that accounted for some of this.
While I don't disagree with that, I will also say that I do agree with the argument that there are so many players. In the first round, Josh, in that first draft, there were 18 players taken. By 24 years later, we're not even going all the way up to now. By 24 years later, in this 1991 draft that Josh was talking about, 264 players were selected. And there were 12 rounds of the draft. You can't argue with that. 18 players versus 264. Mm. There are 246 more players taken, and potentially one Hall of Famer versus the 3 that came from the 1967 draft, or the 2 that came, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And that was in 18 players. So it does lend itself to the notion that the talent pool has been diluted.
And another thing that's going to change, I think we'll see...
Or, hold on a second, or Josh, people say the other side of the coin here, is it the fact that everybody started to become, as you said, as we talked about earlier in the show, with conditioning... By the 1990s, guys were better paid, they were better trained.
And the overturn was slower.
So is it a thing where all of a sudden everybody's as well trained, so you didn't have those guys that elevated above everyone else? You could make that argument.
That plays a factor.
It all depends on what people think.
Because if you're having a longer career, there's less spots to be taken. Because there's only so many spots in the National Hockey League. I think people forget that sometimes.
Number one on the Red Zone's best draft classes of all time. Our unanimous winner was the 1979 NHL draft. 5 Hockey Hall of Famers, and to me, the most mind-boggling statistic, 25 Stanley Cups won between these guys, Josh.
Yep.
Over 2,500 playoff games played. Almost 17,000 NHL points. Throw some names at the people.
Well, first overall, just for reference, Colorado, and that's the Rockies, not the Avalanche, Rob Ramage. Number 3, Mike Foligno. Number 4, Mike Gartner. Number 5, Rick Veit. Number 8, Ray Bourque. You go down a little more, you go down to 11, Mike Ramsey. 12 to Atlanta, Paul Reinhardt, whose son just got drafted this year. 14 for Philadelphia, Brian Propp, who had a very nice career. Next pick after that, Brad McCrimmon, God rest his soul, who was in that tragic
KHL
plane crash
from last September.
You're right. Dwayne Sutter, you can never go wrong drafting a Sutter to the Islanders at 17. Michel Goulet at 20 for Quebec. And number 21 to Edmonton, Kevin Lowe.
You had some significant European in this draft in terms of being a part of the movement. And that was Mats Naslund to the Canadiens at number 37.
Yep, but the names I were reading were just from the first round.
That was just from the first round. Some other notable names taken after that, Dale Hunter, Neil Broughton, number 48, who is the most famous person of this draft, Mark Messier. Taken 21 spots later by the same team, Glenn Anderson.
Both in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
You look at some of these guys. Rob Ramage won 2 Stanley Cups, one with Calgary, one with Montreal. Ray Bourque won a Stanley Cup with Colorado. Brad McCrimmon won one with Calgary. Kevin Lowe won 5 Stanley Cups with the Oilers and the Rangers. Neil Broughton finally won one before he retired with the New Jersey Devils in 1995. Mark Messier obviously won 6. Glenn Anderson won 6.
And Glenn Anderson was really the deal that put that 94 team over the hump, I thought.
Not only that, you look at the guys, Josh, and we talked about their influence, their footprint. A guy like Mark Messier in The Guarantee, which is the clip that we played, a lot of people, especially in New York, would argue that he single-handedly kept that hope and dream alive of ending a 54-year Stanley Cup drought.
Well, to give you some background on how big that guarantee is, and it's mentioned with Joe Namath, who guaranteed the 67-68 Super Bowl against...
whatever it was, maybe 69.
It was Super Bowl III, I know that much.
So then it would have been 69.
It would have been 70, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
But you look at guys like Mark Messier, Kevin Lowe, Dale Hunter, Neil Broughton, who was an instrumental part of the miracle on ice in Lake Placid. These guys had a very defined footprint on the league that you still see now. And they've gone on to become great hockey executives, some of these guys. But you look at guys like Ray Bourque, who some could argue is the best defenseman of all time. You could say that. People might not agree with it, but he's got numbers to back it up.
Played 21 years, something like that.
Mike Gardner scored over 700 goals, one of the very, very few to reach the 700 milestone.
Great skater, and one of the first guys I thought really to plan his post-career, too. But those are the draft classes in which we chose. Agree, disagree, like, dislike. Hey, let us know. We can take it. We've got big shoulders here. We want to hear.
Twitter, CKCU _ the Red Zone. And this is not only to share your opinion, but this podcast will be up later this morning if you feel like listening to it or showing it to somebody. We hope you enjoyed the first episode of our Super Summer Series of Best Draft Class of All Time in the NHL. Susan Johnson is not in this morning. She is off with a bout of the flu, so somebody will be in to fill in for her. The BBC World Service news update is next. And come next week, we haven't decided yet whether or not we're going to do another... Well, next week will be the next summer series. Sports and the regular sports landscape will kick back into high gear again. And we'll see where it goes from there.
We haven't really done anything devoted to baseball. Maybe we'll do something with that. But that's all the time we have. We will be back again next week with an exciting topic to discuss. Maybe you could tweet us about that and what you want to hear. Please do. We'd enjoy that. But that is all the time we have. We'll be back next week on the Red Zone. So long, everybody.